Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time again, another episode of Sports Card Live. We take a magnifying glass to the sports card industry. News, reviews, thoughts, the occasional tangents, and free stuff. Hosted by Dan Rage, Ryan, and Doug Fresh. Boom!
Pack Rippers and Sports Nuts, welcome to another edition of Sports Card Live. It's been a little while. We got a lot of stuff to cover. We just got back in from the 2014 NFL Rookie Premiere, brushing elbows with Manziel, Clowney, all those guys. So we'll talk a little bit about that, some of the cards we've seen, some of the stuff that was going down at the NFL Rookie Premiere. Talk a little bit about the 2014 NFL products that we saw, as well as reviews of NBA Signatures, Crusade, Prism Baseball, Super Deluxe, and some mini helmets. And we'll also do a little bit of national talk today. So it's a pretty action-packed show. Ryan, what's going down, man?
What's up, guys? Doing pretty good.
Not much. Didn't look like your Lakers got that lottery pick. I was pulling for you, man. But what, did they get six or seven?
We got seven, so that's okay. You know, it would have been nicer if they would have hit top three or something. Good for the Lakers and good for the Cards, too. So, but we're at seven,
definitely.
So... You know, we'll get somebody. It looks like about 10 picks deep. This draft is not bad. And then even after that, there's some pretty good players. I don't know if any of these guys are going to be like studs on like a Kevin Durant, LeBron James kind of level, but I think there's going to be some very good players, and pretty excited about it.
Definitely. Dan, did you get back with a nice little suntan out there in Pasadena, Burbank, California?
I gotta say, yeah, little bronzed, you know.
Nice.
It was hot.
It was hot out there. Definitely. And you know, we got the finals kicking off this week. What do you guys think? Are we unanimous going Heat on this finals, or what's your guys' take? Who's going to win it?
Well, I'm going Heat.
Ryan, what do you think?
Oh man, it's tough to go against LeBron, so. You know, I'd have to go Heat too.
Nice. Now, do we see from a Cards perspective, do you guys see any value in any of the, you know, the two teams remaining? Do you see, I mean, obviously LeBron James's value right now from the Cards perspective is pretty high. I mean, there might be still a little bit of room for growth, but do you see anybody like maybe like a Kawhi Leonard or Norris Cole? Is anybody, you think there any could be any kind of jump where somebody might want to invest now before the finals? Start with Ryan.
Maybe not. Maybe it's a good time to sell, maybe. I think LeBron will get a lot of the attention. I have a Tim Duncan card that's worth maybe like 70, 80 bucks. I was thinking about selling it, but I don't know. I might see how the series goes. Kawhi Leonard, maybe a little bit, because he's a younger player. He's still kind of on the rise, whereas Miami doesn't have really players like that. Norris Cole, he's all right, but he's more of a backup kind of role player. Kawhi Leonard could be a, you know, 15, 20 point a game kind of guy once some of the older guys work their way out. So it would be interesting to see what happens to the LeBron cards and maybe some of the Tim Duncan, Topps Chrome rookie cards from way back in the day, like the graded ones, refractors and stuff, finest ones. So nothing too exciting, though.
Yeah. Dan, do you see anybody that you would, you know, maybe try to pick up and maybe
kind of the,
maybe
kind
flip?
Of the same guys. I mean, you can get Norris Cole out there right now cheap. Kawhi Leonard's still a little pricey. I mean, he's always been a little pricey. But Norris Cole, there's tons of Norris Cole stuff out there. And you never know. I mean, he puts together, comes off the bench and maybe puts up like 15 points, maybe a little bit of spike on the cards. But yeah, I don't see too much really coming out of those two teams. They're veteran-based teams. I mean, it's not like there's a rookie basically at the forefront of either one of their teams.
Yeah, there really isn't. I mean, the last rookie we had was Steven Adams on the Thunder that was kind of got a little bit of steam in that series, but there's really nothing from this rookie class that's still going. So, but yet we still have like six or seven more products coming out for this year from Panini. So it'd be interesting to see how some of these mid-level products do after the finals are over and they're all going to come out. So We'll talk a little bit more about that later. Want to kick off the 2014 NFL Rookie Premiere talk. Me and Dan were down there this weekend, actually Saturday. Flew in around 8 and went to the wrong place. We're at the Rose Bowl. We just decided to take a little detour, check out the Rose Bowl, because that's where it's been the last 10 years. And, you know, good planners we are, looked on the phone late and realized, oh, it's at Memorial County Coliseum. So took a cab there real quick, $60 later cab ride, and we were at the rookie premiere. Got about 40 guys there, all the big names out of the draft this year, Manziel, Bortles, Marquise Lee, Sammy Watkins, all those guys are there. Basically, if you don't know what the rookie premiere is, it's an event where all of the two manufacturers, Topps and Panini, are taking pictures that wind up being on all the rookie cards for the entire 2014 rookie year. And they're also signing cards there, stickers there for upcoming products and stuff like that. So that's kind of what goes down. And they also have, during the week, they kind of do a little finance kind of future segment with some of the older veterans or Hall of Famers come in and talk, like Marshall Faulk and D'Angelo Williams were down there telling these guys, you know, this is what you need to do to stay in the NFL, watch your pocketbook, invest wisely, blah, 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 all that other good stuff. So what was your take, Dan? I mean, what did you take in this year from the NFL rookie premiere?
I don't know. I mean, it was pretty much the same as it was last year. I thought there was going to be a lot more media coverage because Johnny Manziel was there, but there really wasn't. A couple more photographers, like, I mean, when Johnny Manziel was throwing, everybody kind of was on the sidelines taking pictures. And, I mean, besides that, everybody else was doing their thing, kind of the same as last year. The fake mimic like they're playing and moving and all that stuff. Kind of fun to watch. There seemed to be a lot more people on the field just with the card companies and stuff like that. I know Fandevor, if you pay, you can actually get into the stadium and they do like a tour. I think there was only maybe 10 or 15 people who were with the Fandevor company. Besides that, like, everybody else was either from a distributor or from a manufacturer or the NFLPA. So, but it seems like there's a lot of people down there. Definitely a lot more than last year.
Well, here's actually something I just thought about on the fly. So you know how they have those guys wear those jerseys? We all know the famous Mark Ingram story, and if you missed the picture, you can actually see it on Ryan's Twitter, at Sports Cards News. You can see the infamous Mark Ingram picture where the game-used jerseys that, or actually I should rephrase that and say event-worn jerseys that actually make it into their cards, they wear those all Thursday or Friday normally. So they have a stack of jerseys that they put on, take off, or in Mark Ingram's case, he put all of them on at once. So they, you know, he had them all done. All one fell swoop, he got them all done. My thing that I just came up with here is, what about the jerseys they wore for the actual photo shoot? Wouldn't it be kind of cool if they actually said that they, you know, wore this for an entire day, and it might make those cards a little bit more valuable?
Maybe.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying on this
we
one?
We did. Yeah, I feel like, I mean, some of them, sometimes you'll get a, like a rookie patch auto or something like that, and you'll see like some grass stains and stuff like that. And you're like, oh, well, that's weird. I thought that was going to be a rookie premiere jersey. It probably is. These guys probably get some dirt on the jersey. It's probably the jersey that they were actually wearing at the rookie premiere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing too. You got some crazy collectors. I mean, just, you know, believe it. Those dog pound guys. I mean, to know that Manziel actually laid down and sweated in this thing. I mean, that might pay an extra $100 more. You put that on the back of the card. Manziel sat and sweat and marinated in this jersey for 5 hours on Saturday in the heat in L.A. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess it wouldn't take all they would really have to do is just tag that jersey and just have it, you know, tagged as, like, the actual rookie premier jersey.
Yeah, because we actually saw, was it McCarron? They have them wear the hats, which has been part of the hats off, and they also do it for the rookie campaign, the rookie Black Friday packs, where they have the hats, you know, because we all, I mean, NFL players don't wear hats typically; they wear helmets. So he was putting on a hat. It was like barely touching his head. He had about 15 of them, and he was, you know, putting it on his head and like taking it off before it even hit his head. And one of them was like the size of my head, which I, if you haven't seen me in person, I've got a gigantic head. And he was putting it on. He's like, man, this thing's way too big. And he just kept picking one off, throwing it off, taking it off. So I like barely touched one, you know, couple follicles on his head before it, you know, was taken off. So you see those guys, I don't know if they really understand the importance to collectors that, you know, it's cool to have these on their head for a little amount of time, but that's how AJ McCarron was doing it.
Yeah, I mean, actually all those hats look huge. They
yeah.
all look like they were like Bruce Bochy size. They were giant.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he actually, there was a couple of them, because I was staring at, I was watching, I'm like, what the hell is going on right now? He would actually grab one and, like, kind of brush it up against his forehead, and which has actually never even hit his actual head. He just, like, hit it, like, brush his forehead, put it back on the ground, or wherever,
yeah.
put it back on the table. I mean, it was kind of insane to watch. He did go through about 20 of them in about 30 seconds.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he might as well have just put them all on top of his head in one fell swoop, and then said they were warm.
That would have been a good picture.
So. You know what also? That would have been an amazing picture. That would have been an amazing picture. 15 hats on his head, right? You know, the thing I also noticed that they pulled a Bengals, like, racing jacket out. And I wonder if they're going to start using those for cards, because if you're not familiar with, like, a racing jacket, it has, like, a million patches on it. So they had, like, a black Bengals jacket that had a million patches on it. So I'm wondering if they're going to do something with that and be like, oh, it's all multicolored patches because there's so many patches
on
the jacket.
Yeah, it was like a suede jacket. And I think each player was putting one on. And they had one, and I think each player was putting one on.
Well, the funny thing about that was the Panini guys weren't sure if it was McCarron's or not. They were asking around, so they didn't know if it was McCarron's or Jeremy Hill's. So,
getting back to McCarron, I don't know why we have so many stories about McCarron. Maybe because we were just like standing there when all this was going on. But at the same time as he's putting on the hats, he also was putting on some cleats. He was trying to do that at the same time, and he basically was like, "This cleat, it's like a 13." He's like, "I don't wear a 13." He's like, "I can't even put this on." So he like basically just handed it back to the Panini person, and then he tried to sell them to his teammate for $300.
Oh, I didn't notice that. That's funny.
He was all, he's like, "You want to buy some cleats? It's all $300."
Well, I mean, from their standpoint, they probably give them the biggest item because there's more material to put in a card, right? I mean, that's kind of the mathematics that I'm put together in my head.
Well, yeah, I mean. Yeah, you're right.
So, one thing also that if you guys didn't know, so you guys are going to be chasing Manziel all year. You're going to get Connor Shod. That's going to be the new term all year. It's Connor Shod because they had an undrafted quarterback at the rookie premiere who's going to be on the Browns. And so this guy, you know, he's out there throwing the ball. So he's going to have cards. So it's going to be one of those things when you're slow rolling your pack, you see a Browns logo, you see that the guy is white. Oh, I've got Connor Shod. That's going to happen all year long. And it's going to happen a lot more than Chandler Harnish, because Chandler Harnish and Andrew Luck, Harnish wasn't a rookie premier guy. So get ready to be Connor Shod. Connor Shod is going to be the most hated guy in the hobby for football cards this year. I guarantee it. Before he even gets a chance to probably throw a ball, he's going to just be hated on.
See, I have no idea why they would do that. Why have two guys from the same team, same position, at the rookie premiere, especially quarterback. Because, I mean, at least receivers, you can have both of them on the field at the same time. Even running backs is the possibility. Tight ends, maybe. Two quarterbacks, they're never going to be playing at the same time.
And, I mean, Johnny Manziel's already a backup, so this guy, at best, is a third to fourth stringer.
Well, he probably won't even make the team. And there's going to be a lot of his autos out there. I mean, he was a rookie premier guy, so he signed a lot. And he was probably on the – it probably got him on the cheap, too.
They probably did. Yeah,
I mean that kind of bums me out, because I know I'm a homer, but I would like to see David Fells there over that guy. I mean, at least Fells is like going to be a backup, maybe a third string. But
well, me and Ryan were talking about it. So there was Connor Shaw along with the guy from the Patriots, which is something Watson. I think it's Asa Watson or Asa or something Watson. And then there's a Thornton for the Packers. So there's five guys that were at the NFL Collegiate Bowl that Panini threw on, and those guys got invited to the rookie premiere. So we don't know if it's a Panini thing, that so Panini's doing it because it's like, oh, we saw these guys at the Collegiate Bowl. So they're continuing on that kind of legacy of these guys. So I don't know if they're going to be on Topps cards, but they definitely are going to be in Panini's cards because of this Collegiate Bowl thing.
Huh. Yeah.
So, and Trevor asked, the only McCarron story we want to hear is if his girlfriend was there. And no, Catherine Webb was not there. She was not there. Kind of
but
a bummer,
Aaron,
I know.
Aaron Murray's girlfriend was there.
Aaron Murray's girlfriend was there. And just Google Aaron Murray's girlfriend, Trevor, if you'd like, or anybody listening out there. And you'll know what we mean. Yeah, she doesn't look real. She didn't look like a real woman. It was just too perfect. But so that's my creepy talk for the day. But Google Aaron Murray's girlfriend. And a little side note: Aaron Murray's brother is on The Bachelorette, and he used to play baseball. So not that I watched that show. Actually, I'm lying. I watch that show because my wife watches it. But his brother is on The Bachelorette this year, competing for a chance at love.
Good to know.
Yeah. I know you're going to go home and watch that right away.
Yeah, no. I have been watching Friends with Better Lives, though.
Pretty epic.
You turned me on to that show. It's pretty good.
Yeah, did you watch the episode I was telling you about?
I don't think so. There was only four episodes.
Got that one.
This is completely off topic now.
Yeah, let's just talk about the TV guide. Let's go through all the stories. We did get some audio.
What's a TV guide?
I know they still make those anymore. It's on the TV now. It's built right in there. You check on, you hit the guide button. Well, we did get some audio from about five of the players there that we're going to try to incorporate into our feed. And I'll play you those. They're all about 4 or 5 seconds. I'll play starting with Carlos Hyde here.
Hey, this is Carlos Hyde. You just pulled my autograph. Congratulations. Go Niners.
Hey, this is Taj Boyd. You just pulled my exclusive card. Can't wait for you to enjoy that card.
Congratulations on pulling my auto, mojobreak.com. Go get it.
And Brandon Cook.
This is Johnny Manziel. You just pulled my autograph. Congratulations. It's mojobreak.com.
Oh, yeah, that was cool. We, walked up to those guys, and they were all super cool to do all that. Wish we could have got a little bit more, but these guys were running around and, didn't want to walk up and bother them. They were all kind of sweating in the heat and, Clowney, I didn't even want to, if I asked him, he might have just, pounded me into the ground like a nail. I don't know. So I just, one more. I forgot to play Terrence West.
Hey, this is Terrence West. Thanks for grabbing my autograph. Dog pound, baby.
So those are the five guys we got. And,
Terrence West or Taylor Swift? I couldn't tell.
But Brandon Cook hails out of Stockton, right down the street from Ryan.
That's right.
Yeah.
Lincoln High School graduate. I watched him play all last year. He's really good. So I'm not surprised he got picked pretty high. So hopefully he was making some money and representing Stockton. Good that you guys got a chance to talk to him. I like how Manziel enunciated, enunciated really well. You know what you should have done, though? You should have went up to Aaron Murray's girlfriend and got her to do a spot.
You just pulled my boyfriend's auto, blah, blah, blah. But a little less manly than that one sounded. Well, that's, it's crazy. Stockton's getting some talent, man. Doug Martin, you guys got a few other guys that came out recently, right, coming out of that area.
Yeah, it's a really good – they have some really good youth football programs around here, so I think that's kind of where it starts. And then Alex Spanos, the owner of the San Diego Chargers, he lives across the street from where I went to high school, where Brandon Cook went to high school, and he dropped hella money, like, resurfacing the field. This was after I graduated, of course. So he just put in artificial turf and new grandstands. I mean, it looks like a really nice field now. So Cook's probably graduated, what, he spent 3 years. So he's like a 2011 graduate or something. So he's a young buck. I mean, damn. So
and he's
good.
To,
yeah, Doug Martin.
He went to Oregon State, right?
Other guys too. He went to Oregon State, yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
yeah.
last year this guy would get, I mean, a normal game, you could go look up his game log. A normal game would be like 12 catches for 180 yards and a couple touchdowns, maybe a two-point conversion, maybe 40-yard rushing. I mean, it was insane. Like, he would put up video game-type numbers. So really good hands. Pretty quick and stuff. He's not a huge guy, so but he's. I mean, Drew Brees. Could you get a better situation so for him? So very excited about that.
Yeah, I think the guy's going to be a beast. He seems like a like you said, multi-purpose player that can maybe do some screens and also catch the long ball, the long pass, long ball. I'm thinking about baseball, but yeah, I think he might be a big weapon next year. So excited to see a lot of these guys. I mean, a lot of these guys are going into good situations. I mean, yeah, the guy from the Falcons, which we didn't get audio of, Devontae Freeman. I mean, all there is Steven Jackson playing for the Falcons, so he might get a start right away. I mean, Carlos Hyde. I mean, Frank Gore and Lattimore. If one of those guys go down, Carlos Hyde could jump right in there and get the bulk of the carries. Sammy Watkins, Stevie Johnson just went, to the Niners, and all they have is Robert Woods and a couple other rookies, and you know, they're going to be throwing the ball because they're going to be playing from behind. So there's a lot of good scenarios out there. Eric Ebron maybe getting some passes on the Lions. Calvin Johnson, double coverage. Eric Ebron has a 1,000-yard season. There's a lot of possibilities this year, which makes this a really exciting 2014 draft class, especially for the products coming out with the guys that came out. One thing me and Dan did talk about was Manziel, because we were wearing Panini America badges, so it looked like we worked for Panini, but we were getting these guys to say Mojo Break. So what was funny is that a lot of them didn't even think twice about saying Mojo Break. So I was thinking, what if you went up there and said, hey, say this is Johnny Manziel, you just pulled my auto on Pornhub.com, and see if he would have dropped it, right? And just not even thinking about it. I was like, we should just do that once. One thing would say, oh, you just pulled my auto on porn.com or something, but no, we probably would have been escorted out of there fast, but it just didn't even seem like they even, cared about what they were saying there. Johnny Manziel was the only one that the first time we did it with him, which I didn't play here, he said, you just pulled my Panini authentic autograph. So he was mindful of that, like, oh, you just pulled my helmet from a guy that was in the stands that I signed before I got drafted. Johnny Manziel, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, it was interesting. It was a good time. It's weird. It's just weird watching all those guys run around and fake play football.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Just catching passes from, like, older Panini guys. Like, Panini guys, like, not the normal Panini guys you see at the shows, Like, maybe some guys that it seemed like maybe they work on the photo team or something, And those guys are out there throwing the ball to some of these receivers.
Yeah.
So,
that's
yeah,
the job
cool
I want.
That. Ah, yeah, that's an awesome job.
I want that job.
So, I mean, what was your, after we move on from the topic of the rookie premiere, What player made the biggest impression on you out there, Dan?
I'm a homer. Trey Mason. Great dude. Sat down and talked to him for a little while. Super legit. I like that kid. Plus, he plays for the Rams. It's a
gave
bonus.
You a homie hug.
He did. We hugged it out.
Well, and you know what? I'll agree with you on that one because I mentioned that I was a Niner fan, and he was like, you guys are always going to be good. And I was like, you're right. At least you know.
Yeah, I didn't really agree with him with that statement. I was like, dude, he's just trying to be nice, Doug.
No, you recognize he recognizes the pecking order. He knows he's on the second or third best team in the NFC West. I mean, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
I
but he
want
was cool.
Winners.
And I got to say, Taj Boyd, probably the guy you're going to say. Really, really nice. Actually, we had just gotten there, and we were just kind of standing there, just looking around. And he came up to us and said, hey, what's going on, guys? I'm like, well,
yeah.
All right. I'm like, What's going on?
Yeah,
he was super stoked to be there.
He was very jolly kind of a guy. You know, he just seemed to, he seemed like he was just laughing with everybody, just happy, you know, not tense, not worried about, you know, what he's going to do, what bar he's going to hit after, or where he's going to go party, or where his buddies at, which a lot of these guys seem to be on their phones a lot. I mean, I know we're all on our phones a lot, but a lot of these guys were texting or on the phone when they weren't signed, and Taj Boyd was kind of mingling around, kind of seemed like an old school kind of mentality. So I hope he gets his shot. You know, he's kind of buried third on the depth chart in the Jets, but all it takes is a Michael Vick injury and a Geno Smith fail, maybe, to give Taj Boyd the start.
Yep. You never know.
You never know. So, some of the cards we saw there, I mean, so they were doing Prestige. Panini was doing Prestige and Elite. You know, the on-card acetates for Elite, the NFL draft passports, the city designs. When we did Leaf Metal Draft, I was really down on these guys' autos, you know, just being the quality, the how they were signing them. They looked like shit, pardon my French. But it almost seemed like a lot of these autos were getting better as they signed for Panini and Topps. So I don't know if they talked to them, but, like, Teddy Bridgewater's is more defined now. It's not just the T and the B, which was just terrible. He's actually, you know, getting the Y in there, and he's making his auto look nice. So I don't know if anybody talked to these guys about how their auto should look, but, I mean, the autos that I've seen this weekend, they were all looking pretty decent.
And I know we've seen it already, but Johnny Manziel has an amazing auto. He does
right.
have a really, really good-looking auto.
He does. It's almost like a logo. Like, he has his own logo, and that's what his auto
is. It does. It does look like a logo. It's pretty sweet.
The only guy that kind of had, remember we were talking about it, there's a guy that was drafted by the Texans late 6th, 7th round, Tom Savage, quarterback for the Texans. His auto was kind of like a TSE or something like that. His auto kind of looked like it could be lame, but the guy's last name is Savage. I don't know why he just didn't write Savage, like, on his card. Like, just that's it. Not even include the T, just put Savage. I mean, that's like a great football name.
And block letters.
Metallica font, dude.
Metallica font.
So, yeah, I mean, 2014 football products, I think are gonna do well. I just hope the manufacturers don't seize the opportunity to just water everything down and massively overproduce things, because I don't think that's gonna be good for it. I think they need to make just the right amount and make it scarce. For example, 2014 Archives, in our opinion, Dan will probably agree with me on here, wasn't really a good product, 2014 Archives Baseball. I mean, it is what it is. It's cool to see the older designs, some cool inserts, some cool stuff for set builders. But, you know, not anything new. But because they only made 800 cases of it because they had no pre-orders, it went up. It skyrocketed. People want it now. So
yeah, I mean, that's supply and demand for you, but that I can guarantee you that set's not going to be out next year.
Right.
So
I mean, I see pre-orders are coming in heavy for Topps Chrome. There's like people, breakers and shops ordering, you know, 20, 30, 40 cases of Topps Chrome, like not just one person.
Well,
so, you know, it just, is it going to be watered down? That's my thing. I hope not.
Topps Chrome Football?
Well.
Yeah, Topps Chrome Football.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, with that many pre-orders, that's never a good sign. I don't want to steer people away from buying it. But Topps, they will produce what the pre-orders determine. So
right.
If there's a 15,000 cases pre-ordered, well, it would be a bad business decision for you if you were the manufacturer to make 7,000 cases.
Right.
Wouldn't you want to make, if people are already spoken for this stuff, wouldn't you want to make 15,000 cases?
You would. I mean, it is supply and demand from their standpoint, but I guess they can pull it off with that product because, you know, the on-card auto doesn't have to be numbered. So, you know, the regular base version doesn't have to be numbered, so they can get like Connor Shaw to sign 50,000 autos and get Manziel to sign 1,000, and then it's, you know, it waters it down, makes it harder to pull a Manziel, which on the flip side could be a good thing, making things more rare. But I don't know. It's just I hope they really think this year through, because I know it's going to be a good year for products, but they need to find a fine balance of supply and demand and not get to the point where it's overproduction.
Well, my issue now is that they're looking for pre-order numbers like 8 months before the product's released.
Tops.
So, I mean, that
Panini is doing opposite.
And I'm saying tops. Tops is not Panini. Panini's doing quite the opposite, actually. But 8 months in advance to get your pre-order numbers in, that's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen it get worse and worse and worse over like the last couple of years. It used to be like 4 or 5 months at the most, and it went to 6 months, 7 months. Now it's 8, 9 months.
Well, I mean, from their standpoint, they do it that they know exactly how much to make, right? I mean, that's why Archives was only made 800 cases, because they probably had a pre-order of 400 cases and maybe doubled it to have shelf stock. And then they're like, that's it, because we're not going to make 4,000 cases if we only have 400 pre-ordered, right?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying about Topps Chrome. It can go the other way as well.
Right.
They can be like, well, we're going to 20,000 cases. Why not? We pre-ordered 20,000 cases. Let's make 20,000 cases of it.
So Panini is doing the opposite. They're just now pre-selling Preferred Basketball, which is a staple for basketball pretty much for the last 3 years now. Always does well with the book cards.
Preferred football, right?
No, Preferred Basketball with the book cards and the silhouette autos.
Okay.
Panini Preferred. Yeah. So they're just pre-selling it. It's coming out in like 6 weeks. So, you know, they really can't get a grasp on their numbers at that point. So I don't know why one manufacturer's one extreme to the next. Why, Ryan, what's your take on why Panini has shifted and why Topps has gone longer?
That's a good question. Topps always says they're made to order. So like you said, that, you know, 800 cases of Archives are ordered. They probably, you know, make more than that just to kind of cover themselves. So I don't know why Panini does what it does. It is like really late. I mean, we just got information on Prestige Football today, and that comes out in 5 or 6 weeks as well. So it's a really short window. Maybe it makes more sense for them. Their products probably stay around a little longer. You know, that's always when you go to the National, it's like all the Panini stuff is like on sale except for the wrapper redemption packs and stuff. Then you can get the wrapper redemption packs. So I don't know. It's an interesting strategy. It would, if it is all this made-to-order stuff and Topps really does do that, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Topps Chrome Football, because like you said, I'll take a case of that right now. So there's all these other people who need, you know, 10 cases, 50 cases, probably in some instances. So what do you do at that point? Do you make it to demand? Do you cut it off and then whatever, allocate people or however they want to call it? So I don't know. I'm guessing they're going to make the cases and they're going to take the money because of what happened last year. If anything, last year they should have made it limited, like really limited, and try to create some kind of artificial demand because it was, quote, limited. I don't know if they could have done that or tried to do that, but I don't know. I don't really know why, you know, like you said, you're gonna have to pre-order 2015 baseball here probably in a month or two. And so, but with Panini, it's 4-6 weeks. So it's an interesting strategy. It would be interesting to get both their takes on it as to why they've chosen that model with, you know, their whole product line. You know, Topps Football, Topps Baseball, same way. All of Panini products are the same way, really short windows in Panini's case and long windows in Topps' case.
Yeah, unless Panini's taking the Brian Gray approach, because Leafs normally like a 3 to 4 week window. You know, unless it's like a big product like Trinity or something, they only, you know, they say, oh, Best of Baseball and Open's coming out in 4 weeks, so we need your orders now. And then they announce, you know, he'll announce a sellout within like three or four days because he only makes, you know, 200-300 cases or whatever because it's a smaller company. So he does this short window, and maybe Panini saw, oh, people, you know, his stuff's in demand. He's selling out, and his secondary market's going up. Maybe we need to do that for our model. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Maybe they think people's attention span is not there for 6 weeks, you know, for 6 months like Topps staple products are, and they figure that they need to get numbers in right away. I have no idea. It's definitely the tide has changed because Panini was closer to Topps in 2012, 2013, now they've begun closer to Leaf. So it's interesting. Because I even see Flawless, the calendar I got today, they have Flawless football, whether or not this is true or not, they have Flawless football coming out August 20th.
Yeah, I bet that's right.
Yeah.
So that's you know, 2 months away. So, I mean, something like that Flawless, you know, basketball, they gave us 2 or 3 months, you know, and it didn't come out until the end of the season. So I don't know if that was the typo that I seen to release Flawless, like in the like beginning of the season. Maybe it's a new strategy. Maybe they think, you know, Flawless football right at the beginning when all the rookies haven't, you know, developed yet is the way to do it so that everybody's trying to collect their rookie right at the beginning. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's
but
crazy.
But they definitely were not having them sign Flawless cards at the premiere.
Yeah, I didn't see. Actually, I only the only ones I actually had seen. You already mentioned them. The Elite, and what was the other one you were talking about?
For Prestige.
Prestige. Those two from Panini, I didn't see. I know they have the Score product coming out.
I think those are all going to be stickers.
Are those going to be sticker autos?
Yes, yeah, those are all going to be stickers. It's the first
product. And then,
out, yeah.
And then Tops, I only saw Inception.
And an 85 design card.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The 85 design, which flagship maybe. Maybe Tops, just Tops football.
Unless they're going to do an Archives Tops football.
Tops football, Tops football regular.
Tops football regular, yeah.
Regular edition.
So, you know, it's interesting with the products and what this year's going to be bringing. So we'll be talking about it all year on this show, and obviously we'll be doing all the products on our feed. I think the first one supposedly drops in about 14 days, the Hot Rookie. So they've got that one prepared quick, and then I think there's a one coming out almost every week because you guys got to remember that the shortened or the prolonged NFL draft has put these guys probably behind the eight ball. I mean, they probably had to pay the NFLPA on the same timing. So now they're out of the products for NFL for an extra month. So now they're going to be boom, 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 one right after another. So in about, you know, 3 weeks here, get ready for just football overload from both of these manufacturers.
Yep.
Which isn't a bad thing, I don't think. I think there's a good demand for it.
Yeah, I mean it's going to be a strong rookie class. I mean there's going to be a lot of guys here are going to emerge. I mean it's hard to tell. You don't really know until you get out there and start playing. But there could be a couple superstars in that mix.
I think there will be. I think it'll be good. I don't know if it'll be as strong as 2012, but it's going to be a hell of a heck of a lot better than 2013.
Well, I mean if you take Andrew Luck out of 2012. How strong was 2012? Including
well, I mean,
Andrew Luck.
You had RG3, Russell Wilson, Nick Foles is now emerging. You had early on, you had Trent Richardson. You got Josh Gordon, Luke Kuechly. So I mean, there's some decent Doug Martin, Justin Blackmon was talented, but Michael Floyd, Kendall Wright. So, I mean, there's all guys that are like starters or the premier guys on their team. You're thinking from a quarterback standpoint, if it lost Andrew Luck, yes, maybe it might not be as great, but there's a lot of guys coming out of that.
Russell Wilson, he won a Super Bowl, so I mean, I'll give him that. I don't think he's an elite quarterback. I would put him in the same tier as a Joe Flacco. So
yeah.
I mean, if you put Russell Wilson on another team, Russell Wilson does not even get close to winning the Super Bowl. He's not a guy who's gonna drive a team to the Super Bowl. He needs to have a heck of a supporting cast to get it done. I mean, most of the quarterbacks in the league, it's like that, with the exception of Drew Brees and Tom Brady in his heyday, Peyton Manning. I mean, it really depends on your team.
Yeah.
RG3, we'll see how he comes back from last year. And I mean, he seems to have the injury bug. So we'll see what happens there.
Well, Trent Richardson,
I think he could really only bounce back. I think Dougie Martin is legit. I think, you know, people go through injuries, it happens, but he's going to bounce back. He's a top tier running back.
I mean, what's funny thing is maybe this hobby is what have you done for me lately? Because look at 2011 products are pretty much readily available for the most part, and they're all at pretty fair prices. You're talking about Cam Newton and Colin Kaepernick, two guys that were in the NFC championship or almost NFC championship for the Panthers. Yet two quarterbacks that were the last four teams remaining out of that same rookie class. Then you also got A.J. Green. You have Julio Jones. Granted, Julio Jones has been, you know, redemption a lot of things, and he doesn't sign. You have DeMarco Murray. You know, there's a lot of other guys, Kyle Rudolph. That, to me, I would actually take a 2011 product over a 2012 just because those two elite quarterbacks are, I think, more elite than the Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, in my opinion. But maybe that's because I'm a homer with Kaepernick, and I think Cam Newton is going to only get better too.
No, that's my argument about 2012. I'm kind of on the same boat. I'm like, 2011, everybody talks about 2011 is amazing.
Right.
I think Randall Cobb was in there too, right?
Randall Cobb, yeah, absolutely. Another guy, Randall Cobb, who did get hurt this year, but, I mean, he's a top-tier wide receiver.
So, I mean, I think 2011, amazing. 2012, you had the one and two picks were both quarterbacks, and
right.
Russell Wilson also emerged. But I think we're going to look at these drafts in 5 to 6 years and go, damn, 2011, look at all these Pro Bowlers. I mean, look at these guys.
Well, I just pulled it up. You don't even have to worry about that because out of the 11 top, the first 11 picks, 9 of them are Pro Bowlers already.
See?
Cam Newton, Von Miller, Marcel Darius, A.J. Green, Patrick Peterson, Julio Jones, Alden Smith, Tyrone Smith from the Cowboys offensive tackle, and J.J. Watt, the Texans. Top 11 guys, 9 of them made it to the Pro Bowl already. And then you go a little farther down, you got Robert Quinn, Mike Pouncey, and Ryan Kerrigan, who also made it to the Pro Bowl at 14, 15, and 16. And you got Cameron Jordan, the defensive end for the Saints, who made it. You have Andy Dalton, who made the Pro Bowl. Forgot about Mr. Ginger, Andy Dalton.
Cool.
You got Kyle Rudolph, who made the Pro Bowl. Justin Houston from the Chiefs, who made the Pro Bowl. DeMarco Murray from the Cowboys. Jordan Cameron from the Browns was out of that draft. Julius Thomas out of that draft for the Broncos. Richard Sherman out of that draft. He doesn't have a whole lot of cards, unfortunately. But, I mean, that is a pretty phenomenal rookie class for products to be still be available in some at below pre-sale, in my opinion.
It's crazy. I mean, it is absolutely crazy. And I mean, we probably have had this conversation before, but I can't explain it. I mean, because you try to buy a 2012 box of Absolute or Limited or Triple Threads, I mean, you're paying, 40%, 50% more than what the pre-sale price was?
A box of Contenders is $300.
How much?
$300 for a box of Contenders. No joke. I'm not even joking. That's real talk right there.
And how much is a box of 2011 Contenders?
$130.
Okay, yeah, this conversation's done.
you get two boxes for the price of one.
Yeah. I don't get it. I don't get it.
It's the what have you done for me lately? It's It's the new booty. It's new booty. 2012.
New booty?
New booty. New booty.
Oh. Never,
not new, but not new booby. New booty.
I'm like, new booby. I'm like, never heard that before.
it's new booty, man. And it's still, I mean, because 2013 was so mediocre, and I'm being generous here. 2013 NFL products was so mediocre that people are going back to 2012. They're still dipping in. So the 2012 product run lasted 2 full years. That's it. That's what happened. 2011 only had 1 year to breathe. We were on to 2012 already. So those products are still there. People still want 2012. That's what it is.
So everybody should take a step back and just go buy some 2011 products.
No, don't, because I want to buy it. Don't buy it.
Oh, okay, never mind. Don't do that.
I'm just kidding.
New booby.
New booby.
New booby.
Oh, man.
Man, I got to lay off the peyote.
Yeah, I mean, I just that explains the 2012. 2013 was so bad that when guys went into the card store, regardless of what came out, unless it was National Treasures or maybe Contenders or Chrome, they bought whatever the guy had on the shelf in 2012. They still were chasing luck. They still were trying to go after RG3 for this whole entire last year. So you may see these prices on these Contenders boxes dip once 2014 comes out, because the new booty, Johnny Manziel, that's what they're going to be going after. They're not going to be considered. They're not going to go after RG3 luck anymore. They're going to go after the new booty.
All right.
Am I off base here, guys? Am I off base? Am I crazy? Am I smoking the peyote?
No. I mean, I get what you're saying. I feel you. I mean, we see it in all the sports. We see it in baseball as well.
But so, baseball has a little bit more sustainability when it comes to the prospect products, where you can, you know, I was looking at, I think it was 2010 Bowman, because I was looking at, I mean, Josh Donaldson is freaking tearing it up. So I was like, what product's he in? Oh, he's in 2010 Bowman. Man, you know, I mean, now they got Strasburg's that year too. I mean, so it's like, oh, you know, that box may be worth buying again. So there's like a lot of stuff that can happen in baseball. Whether it's football, it seems like, you know, right away, these guys are not going to be anything, so.
Yeah, but you get these waves. Like, what, 3 weeks ago? What, maybe 4 weeks ago? Chris Bryant redemptions out of Bowman. Redemption base autos. People chasing them, willing to spend like $500 for a redemption. That was a what is hot for me right now, this second.
Right.
And that's what it was. It was Chris Bryant. Now Chris Bryant's going to have a lot of stuff and a lot of different products over the next year or two.
Yes.
And you're going to be able to get his autos for $40-$50.
Yeah.
Until he gets called up. He will get called up at some point. There will be a spike. It was who hit a home run against the Giants who got called up this week? Oscar Tavares?
Yeah, I was just about to get into that.
Did anybody great segue, huh? I didn't even know what is on your itinerary, and I was still able to segue you into that. What's up?
Oh, perfect. Reading my mind.
No, but so he got called up. What was his spike in cards? I mean, over that weekend?
I mean, base autos were around 100, and I think they went to at least 150 from what I could tell. It's a weird thing with baseball because, like, you flashback last year to Mike Zunino. The guy was absolutely on fire from a prospect standpoint. I mean, his prices were insane, and then he gets called up, and they go down. So it's really a fine line with prospects. Ryan, did you cash in on any – did you have any Oscar Tavares that you cashed in on or buy some on Check Out My Cards? Bought some, I should say, proper English. And I don't know if we have Ryan. So. Maybe he realized he has to go buy some Oscar Tavares right now. That's why I said that, and he had to go get some.
He's like, I got to go right now. Yeah, I definitely didn't buy any. I may have an Oscar Tavares floating around somewhere.
Yeah.
But I'm not. I'm not sure. That's why I was asking you to see what the spike was. It was his first first at bat, right?
Yeah, it was first at bat. He had a home run. They actually won that game, I think, 2-1. Giants actually blanked on that one. He did pretty well. I'm actually trying to pull up his stats to see if what he's done in any of his other at-bats. Can't seem to find it. Major League, minors batting, minors fielding. Baseball Reference is not up to date. So I'm trying to – MLB.com may be up on it. See if he's – what he's still batting over here. He's got 3 games, 10 at-bats, 2 hits. One was a home run, so – 1 RBI. So he's batting 200 right now, but hasn't gotten a whole lot of opportunities for that matter.
Yeah.
Ryan, we were asking if you cashed in on any of the Oscar Tavares call-up, if you had any in your PC or in your Check Out My Cards. Oh. He's still on eBay buying them. He's still grabbing them. But what was I going to say? So, yeah, it's prospects getting called up, and there's going to be a few more this year. Probably the Cubs are going to have one of those guys get called up, Baez, probably maybe Almora, probably not Bryant this year, maybe next year for Bryant. But it does seem like their first Bowman auto is the one you want. So, I mean, Platinum's going to come out. Bryant's going to be in there, probably going to devalue it a little bit. Sterling's going to come out, not going to sell as much as the Platinum auto, not going to sell – it's going to be like a third tier. So it's like everyone that comes out just kind of goes more in value, goes down.
Which I never, and I know we've talked about this before, I never understood why people just don't care about Sterling. It's an odd card auto. It looks great. Every year, super consistent, great value for the consumer. And on the secondary market, it just doesn't matter. It always sells for maybe 50% of what the Chrome auto goes for.
Right.
I've never quite understood. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, even the guys like Buxton, and they still sell for a fraction of what the Chrome auto sell for.
Yeah. It's crazy. And speaking of Sterling, they just did the sell sheet on 2014 Sterling, and the design looks amazing. I mean, I got to give it up to Topps. It seems like starting with, I think it kind of started with 2013 Triple Threads around that time, and also 2013 Bowman Sterling, which all kind of came around. They've kind of took a more modern, cleaner look to their cards. Like they've kind of, that's what they've gone into. And you'll see it even more. If you Google 2014 Bowman Sterling baseball, it's a completely different design, but I like it. I mean, this is obviously the mock-up sell sheet pictures, but it seems like Topps is kind of moving and adapting and changing and getting into the modern era, and I like it. So they're really – whoever they hired in the design department is doing a really good job.
See, I like the 2012 Sterling design, and I know you're not a big fan of it, but I like the way that looks. They put a lot of space there for the auto.
I don't mind it. It was the first year they got away from the sticker auto. So they were doing the on-card. Sterling from the past, since it was arrived in 2004, it was a sticker auto. So now they're doing on-card. So that was the first year of the on-card. So you're only seeing it getting better.
Yeah. And 2013 was guess the first name era series.
Yeah, but that's the clean look, though. You just gotta, you gotta just study some prospects.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or you gotta just open up 4 cases on, like, the day of release so that it kind of sticks into the brain. So.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I noticed, I want to document this, and maybe we'll have a reoccurring segment on here, but it's fun times on Craigslist. If you do a search for baseball cards on Craigslist, I mean, you just see some ridiculous stuff. I mean, not in a good way. You see, like, people peddling off 1990 stuff for, like, they just think it's worth millions of dollars. I mean, at this point in modern technology, can't you just hop on eBay and see what your stuff's worth? I mean, and then some of these descriptions are ridiculous. I've got like three articles that I found. This guy put baseball cards, 1990s, $275. And then in the description it says 1990s, baseball cards, $275, the best offer. That's the listing. Now, is it two cards? I mean, so he said cards, so I'm assuming it's, you know, more than one. So is it two cards or is it 5,000? I mean, pretty sure nobody's going to send the guy an email. Just saying.
That's a good one. I like that.
And then there's a baseball card collection, 5,000 plus, meaning how many he has, $2,000. And then you click on the link, and it says, this is a huge collection of baseball cards collected from the 1990s. Now call me a card snob. You know, somebody say maybe there's no name on Front Break Thomas in there, or maybe a Derek Jeter somewhere mixed in. But I'm assuming instead of being worth $2,000, it's probably worth $20. Actually, this guy probably, if he has buckets of them, probably should just pay somebody to take them. I'm sorry. I mean, I know that doesn't sound like I'm a collector at that standpoint, but these guys need to just take a look on eBay. See what these cards are selling for. I mean, you're just wasting your time putting a Craigslist ad up.
Well, I mean, there is that misconception that when everybody was collecting in the 80s and the early 90s, up to the early 90s, this was everybody's retirement fund. This was going to basically set you up for life, and they were just super mass produced, and we've talked about it again. We've talked about it a million times, and people do have this common misconception that they're like, well, they used to be worth this much, so now they got to be worth this much. So some
right.
people, I mean, for 5,000 cards, they may look at it and go, well, that's like 50 cents a card. I mean, you're getting a good
right.
deal.
Right.
I don't know.
No, I mean, I guess I could see that. I mean, and there's probably some amazing deals to be found on Craigslist. I mean, I've heard stories of guys on Blowout that found cards and then flipped them and stuff like that. There's probably some good deals out there, but it just seems like we're in that time period. Our age group, they're moving, you know, getting a new house somewhere. They have to clean out the garage. Stuff's been in there for 20 years from their mom's house or wherever they're living now. They go, oh, all these cards from the 1990s. Man, that's 25 years old almost. This stuff's got to be worth a lot. And they put it on Craigslist. They started to hire, and they're like, nobody wants this stuff. They call, I'm sure we'll be getting this call now that we get the card shop. You know, hey, man, can I bring in my, you know, my 1990 collection for you guys to check out and stuff? You know, you don't want to sound like a dick by saying, hey, man, they're not worth anything, because then you're like, the guy's thinking, oh, you're not even going to look at my cards. You're telling me they're worth nothing. It's like, well, 99% of the time there are, maybe 99.9% of the time, is people don't understand the overproduction that was done in the 90s, because our fathers, you know, the guys that are in their 50s and 60s now, that had cards in the 60s, they all threw their cards away. So it created a scarcity. And then when we were kids, our dads were like, I wish I would have threw my cards away. You need to keep these cards forever. And everybody kept them forever. And that's why. It's that age-old story. So everybody held on to their 1989 score. All the 1989 scores out there. Nothing got thrown away. Maybe they're starting to get thrown away now, but that's what happened.
Everybody kept their 1990 Pro set.
Let's see if I had. Oh, there was another guy that made me laugh. You remember that Sports Talk baseball game? It was like a electronic, and I think, Ryan, you're back live here. I don't know if you can hear us.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Thank God.
Jeez. Real difficulties over here. I'm like, I think I'm more on than mine. I'm calling Skype, busy signal, my phone. I heard you guys talking, and then I'm trying to answer, and it's like, what the hell? Like, damn, I can't get anything to work over here. Jesus.
No worries, man. There was a Sports Talk baseball game. I remember it must have been my eighth or ninth birthday. I think I got it, and it was like a It was like an electronic thing that you put this card in, and then like you could put a Hank Aaron card in there, and then Hank Aaron will be like, I put, you know, he'll say some of his stats or he'll say something. You guys, are you guys familiar with that sports talk baseball game?
I'm not familiar, but it sounds awesome, actually. Yeah,
it's pretty cool. So there was a guy on Craigslist trying to sell it for 50 or best offer, and then he says some selling online for 350. So I went on eBay, and there was one that didn't sell for $20. I'm like, come on now, dude. Like, really? You know? Like,
well,
so you've seen somebody have a buy it now for $350? Like, I could put up one for $5,000. Is he going to put it in his listing? One, somebody was selling it online for $5,000.
Well, I mean, that's the whole deal with Craigslist, though. I mean, he knows the market. People who are scouring Craigslist are trying to buy something to flip it. Put in your listing, this thing sells on eBay for $1,000. You can buy mine for $100. You're going to get a lot of people going, who? What? What's going on? I'm interested. So he's just going after that market that he knows that people who are on Craigslist are looking to buy things to be able to flip them.
Right.
So.
And then the best one was valuable sports cards, $2,500. And you click on it, and the guy's got several pictures, and it's 1990 Pro Set Barry Sanders, 1986. They're in sleeves. 1986 Eric. 1986 Eric Davis, Ramon Martinez, 1987 rated rookie Roberto Alomar, all stuff from the Mark McGuire, 1989 tops, 1989 Upper Deck Mark McGuire. But all it says, I have some old valuable sports cards. If interested, please call me. $2,500 is what he has posted at.
It's a good deal. That's a...
Yo, came up.
Yeah, that's... Well, I mean, we could always buy that. We could do a buyback product. And just
there
be
you
like,
go.
This is what you get. A little pro set.
Yep. Have you had any success, Ryan, on buying cards on Craigslist or finding anything on Craigslist from a memorabilia standpoint?
That's my number one resource. You know you stay away from those desperation, those guys trying to get too much money. But some guys are desperate, so you know you can get all kind of high school worn jerseys and stuff. And
nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes you see that like estate sale, and the guy shows some old cards. You're like, man, what if they realize what they have? You know, and you could probably make almost a good living if you say you were out of work and you had a lot of time to go and hit all these people up on Craigslist and sift through some collections. You could probably do pretty well.
Some people probably do it. I bet. I'm sure. You know. If you really know what you're doing, I guess. Thrift stores, maybe. I used to do that when I was broke. I didn't have any money, so I would go to a thrift store and buy some jeans for $3 and then put them on eBay and get, $80 and stuff. That was back in the day. And eBay, you just felt like you could get more money for stuff. So that's what I used to do back in the day. When you're broke, you gotta try everything. So sometimes you go to that thrift store and you find some Seven for All Mankind jeans or whatever the ladies were liking at the time. You pick it up and put it on eBay.
Yeah, we actually have a similar story. We would do garage sales, map them all out. Look for keywords like electronics or stuff about any kind of memorabilia, collectible. I mean, we had it down to a science at one point. Me and Dan were doing this before we did Mojo Break, and as a kind of a side job on the weekends, and plan it out, try to hit up as many as you can in the morning, and get your eBay app ready. I mean, I know it looks like you're kind of that asshole on the eBay app, looking. This guy wants $20, so you're on eBay going, oh shit, what does it sell for? Oh, it's $50 on eBay. Okay, all right, take 15 for it, right? So, but this guy said make a good living just doing stuff like you said, thrift stores or garage sales, and it's very kind of a low investment. You could probably start with $200 over a weekend and get all kinds of stuff at a garage sale. I mean, shit, you could probably do $50 and get a good collection of stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
So I remember we got like a some kind of electronic monster like receiver.
It was a power conditioner.
Oh, power. Okay, there you go. You get all that.
It came from my expertise, I guess. It was kind of music related. It's like pro sound related.
Yeah, and we got it for like $10, and I think we sold it and flipped it for like $200 or something like that.
Nice.
So
yeah, it
was
like $250 or $300 or something.
Nice.
So, but I've noticed there's a lot of people doing that too. So you got to get there first. So now we're giving you like a little training session on how to make money at garage sales. But you got to get there first. If they open at 7:30, be there at 7. So. Yeah, you got, because the good stuff that's cheap is going to be gone quick. So, if not, you're going to be looking at old plates and clothes. So, but completely off topic. Went from Craigslist to garage sales. You know, it's kind of a little bit off topic. But what do I got next? You want to talk about the national, or do we want to do reviews?
Actually, I was going to talk I was actually talking about it earlier before we started, and I don't know much about it, but my coworker was actually talking about it. It's called the Loot Crate, or Snoop Dogg has one as well, where there's three different options. There's like Standard, Deluxe, and Ultimate, and it's a different size box, and you pay for it like a subscription monthly, and
it's a fancy box.
No, there's a million different ones. It's like super popular.
Yeah,
I was on YouTube and I was watching people like open them up, and like they all have themes. So there's one for like gamers, and it has like different gamer themes, and they pull out like all these little knickknacks of like gamer like memorabilia and like comic books, and like they say it's going to be $40 worth of value, and like you basically spend like $13 a month, and they send you a package every month. And Snoop Dogg has one as well. It's called like the Loot Crate or Loot Box or something. I don't know.
It's a fancy box. I checked out his Twitter because he has Allen and Ginter autographs, so he incorporated the cards back into it, and he was promoting Fancy Box. He said, "I just got it in, and it's got like a little picture, like a popsicle, like." And then you open it up, and there's like could be a watch in there, or like all kind of like a Bluetooth speaker or something. It's all like different. Crazy.
Yeah, that's what it is. And you basically you pay like a monthly service to get these boxes. And I was watching some people open them up, dude. There's people who have like 200,000 views on YouTube.
Wow.
And
so it's isn't that like a grab bag?
No, it actually, dude, it is. The one I was reading about, they give 8 grand prize winners per month, and they guarantee $800 worth of value in their box.
Wow.
Randomly selected to 8 people, and I'm like, isn't this exactly what we talk about all the time about sports cards and Razzes and group breaks and like all this stuff? This is exactly that, but this is on a huge level. I mean, for just some average Joe to open up a box and have 200,000 hits on YouTube, this has got to be a pretty big niche. I mean, we're talking 200,000 views is significant.
Yeah, I actually just went on lootcrate.com. Maybe we can get them as a sponsor now. $13.37 a month, and it's they show pictures of Capcom, Marvel, Star Wars, Nintendo, and it's like little figurines, their shirts. Yeah, it's freaking crazy, dude. That's nuts.
I don't know how I didn't know about this. It's kind of nuts. It's a little interesting, little creative, I guess. It's kind of a grab bag, isn't it? But I think everybody everybody gets the same, like every box, every package gets the same amount of stuff, except for the eight people they randomly select that gets like the super box or like mega box or whatever they call it, bonus box. Huh.
Maybe we could do that to clear out old inventory. It's like, oh, your box, rookie.
That's what you should do, really.
Subscription service. Oh, you get a box of rookie anthology, and maybe 1 month you get Bowman box or PAX or something like that. Oh, dude, I got to talk to you about it. I just have an idea. We got to talk about this off the air. So I just spurned a new idea.
Well, the funny thing is that we're putting together an idea for it, but for musicians.
Ah.
Like, basically, guitar players buy the guitar player pack, and you get strings and all that crap that you need for guitar players. Drummers get, like, drumsticks and other accessories, drum keys, crap like that. And we're sitting here trying to put it together over here. I mean, I always rip on people for not having an original idea, and now I'm here stealing somebody's idea. So, yeah, whatever.
Well, it's a good thing that nobody listens to the show. So I've got some ideas for a baseball or for a card loot crate thing. That's probably copyrighted. I have to come up with another idea. So, wow, that's pretty cool. What are we going to do, reviews or are we going to talk national? Oh, man.
And talk loot crate.
Loot crate. Check it out, Loot Crate.
Loot Crate. this show is brought to you by LootCrate.com.
Yep, that's it.
I think we're going to do reviews, right?
I think so.
I think we just did a review
on Loot Crate. Yeah, we did. So let's start off with a good one, and then we'll go to a bad one. And then we'll end off with a good one. So we'll do like a build-break-build. So it'd be a good, a bad, and then another good. So it won't seem like the bad one. It'll just be overlooked. So I want to – Prism Baseball. Start off with Prism Baseball. Amazing value. $65, I think, retail is what it's going for. You're looking at two autos and at least three numbered cards per box. I mean – such a jump from last year. More on-card autos than not this year. Great autograph selection. Yes, it's unlicensed, so you're going to get those people saying, hey, I only buy licensed stuff. There's no logos on it. But just a really, really good product. I mean, just for the price point, I just can't see any more value be put in for that price point. If you do a case break of it, it's a 20-box case, you're looking at 40 autos. And probably five or six gold parallels, maybe a one-of-one. Just a ton of value. I mean, talk about signers like Ron Darling, guys you haven't seen in products for a while, Daryl Strawberry, plus your run-of-the-mill Oscar Tavares, Chris Bryant in there as an autograph. They got Abreu in there as an autograph. Just a very wide selection of autographs, and the color looks better. I think it's a great product. I think it's one of the better values for baseball that's come out in the last 3 or 4 months. So I give Panini big props for that product. Dan, what's your take?
Yeah, that product is nothing to sneeze at, if you get my pun. And the only reason why I bring it up is because every time we would open up that product, they put some kind of potato starch or corn starch to keep the cards from – Doug and I would just be sneezing like crazy. If anybody was watching breaks, I must be allergic to it. I would just sneeze like crazy, and it's everywhere. So
yeah, that would be the
product.
That would be the downside to it. It looked like Scarface kind of packed out those cards. You know what I mean? On his office, down to cocaine. But did you see the news release, Ryan, about that Panini actually owned up to it and they explained what it was? Did you hear about this with the Prism cards?
I read the little thing about it. The powder, the special powder or whatever it was, seemed kind of like a printing technical kind of thing. And I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, we've kind of seen some powder. But I didn't know that it was that bad, that it was like making you guys sneeze. And, you know, it was like Scarface, you know, just fucking cutting out a line and stuff. So that's pretty interesting.
I wish I could make it up, but we would be opening up a case of this stuff, and there would just be, like, we'd be, like, in a cloud of smoke. I mean, it was kind of ridiculous. I mean, it was pretty damn excessive, but overall, they had some great designs. Like, the Mojo Blue parallels looked really good. The Jackie Robinson parallels look really, really good. The silver parallels were amazing. Tons of on-card autos. I think we pulled, out of a 20-box case, I think we pulled, like, 11 or 12 gold parallels.
Wow.
So the stuff was loaded. And the golds look amazing. It has the same prism technology as the football and as the basketball. They just did a really good job. And you know what? They were due for a good baseball product. And yeah, a baseball product that's good at that price point it's just good for everybody. It's good for the end consumer. It's good for card shops that can sell them by the pack. And, you know, note they're selling a good product that has value. And it's good for group breakers. It's good for everybody. And I also give props to Panini on that product.
Yeah. They explained it. The dust in question is actually a harmless organic press powder that's been used by trading card manufacturers in the past. To find out why it was used on these two products, keep reading. In an effort to make the cards more signature-friendly for autograph seekers, Panini America officials altered the construction of their Optichrome cards by adding assignable UV coating to the card front. Although the company conducted extensive research and development on the process to perfect it, the cards weren't feeding into the machine feeders properly during pack-out as they were preliminary tests. So to ensure the cards weren't damaged and weren't double-feeding and to avoid delaying pack-out of both products by several weeks, company officials made the decision to incorporate organic press powder, commonly made of cornstarch or potato starch or anthrax. No, I'm just kidding. Commonly made of cornstarch or potato starch. So company officials have continued testing to ensure complete compatibility with machine feeders. So, you know, it's funny that the comments below, it was a mixed result. They were saying people were, like, hating it, and then some people were like, well, the powder may protect the cards later on, so if you keep the powder on the cards and put it in a sleeve, maybe the cards will last long. So there was, like, some mixed reviews on it. I don't really have a problem with it. I see why they needed to do it. It wasn't a huge deal, besides I thought I was getting sick from the powder, but I think it was just, you know, tickling my nose hairs a little bit, making me sneeze a little bit. But it was in Crusade too. So Crusade and Prism both had the kind of the starch.
Yeah, I was sneezing my ass off, man. I don't know. Like, I mean, I have bad allergies anyway, but nah, man, it was bad. It was,
yeah.
You got to be careful with that stuff, because I mean, what if somebody opens up those cards and they're, like, allergic to cornstarch? They start breaking out hives. Dude, that could happen. That's a real thing.
Is it really? It's on the real?
That's a real thing. It can really happen.
For real?
For real.
No, I mean, yeah. I don't know. I mean, They're going to continue to kind of run into these obstacles. I mean, look at 2010 Chrome. I mean, the damn thing's the St. Louis Arch now. That's how much it's bent.
Yeah, but isn't going to stop the cards from bowing. And plus, like, the Panini Prism cards are a little bit thicker than a standard, like, Topps Chrome card.
Right.
So...
So what happens if you keep the cards for, you know, in their wrappings for, you know, 4 to 5 years? Are they going to start growing potatoes out of there?
No, it turns into bubble gum.
Nice.
It molds together and becomes bubble gum.
Because I was thinking, you know, I could keep some, and if it doesn't sell, I might have dinner one night, you know, open it up, get myself a potato, or maybe if I need some cornstarch and in cooking, like if I'm short on cornstarch, I could open up my Panini Prism packs and just dump the cornstarch out right into my food.
Oh, I thought you just could dump the whole pack in there.
Mix around the whole,
yeah. Just Just give it a little flavor right there, a little cardboard flavor.
Nice, nice. No, but on a for real note, on a serious note,
on
yeah,
the,
a really
on the
good,
for real.
On the for real note, yeah. Yeah, I'm starting to change my talk now. Great product, good value. I don't think it will really go up, but I don't think it's going to go down at that price point. If I used to collect how I collect, like back in the day when I first got started, that would be the product I would go in and buy packs of, guaranteed. Because I used to only go into the card shop back when I got back into the hobby and I had a few dollars. I'd go in and buy elite packs because I knew I had the best, you know, possibilities of getting some autos. So if I was me and Prism was out then, I would buy Prism. So I think it's
a
really good thing.
If you were you.
Yeah.
But you are you.
I was hoping nobody would catch that and call me out on it, and we would just glance over how I said that. But no, what I was trying to say is if you rewind, you know, back to 2008 when I first got into collecting and they released a Prism product like this, that's where my money would go when I go into the card store. That's what I was trying to say.
Oh, all right. That makes sense.
Yeah. yes,
good.
Now we'll get into NBA signatures, which is bad. It's really bad. It's not a good product at all. I mean, there's some value, but not at the price point they're pushing it out as. I don't know what they were thinking. I mean, the design's not terrible. It's just $120 for two autos, and one of them could possibly be a Rafe LaFrance number to $299. It just can't – you can't cut it at that value.
That's one of the better ones.
Probably one of the better ones, yeah.
That is one of the better ones. There's some guys for a $60 auto in that product. Out of all the products I've opened this year, there's some guys I've never heard of.
Yes.
Like rookies, I'd be like, I've never – like, there was – Dellavedova.
Yeah, they got.
I know that guy I know that guy plays, but that guy has not been in any product.
Yeah.
For $60, that was actually, and I don't like ripping on Panini because they do a lot of good things, but that was tough. That was probably one of the. I'm just gonna say it. One of the worst products for value I've ever opened.
Yeah,
We had more. It's not like we opened up two or three boxes of it. We went through a decent amount of it. That will be on the Father's Day list of stuff to buy to get Father's Day packs. I can guarantee you.
Yeah. It was pretty bad. It was horror awful. To use the word from Shaq, it was horror awful.
It was a turd.
Yep, man, we still got a case left, and we went through three cases, and we got a case left. I'm still saying that, so you know it's bad.
Yeah, I can't. Poof.
I mean, you could get an MCW out of there, Oladipo, probably Kobe in there. I mean, if you're fortunate enough to hit one of those, it just there needed to be like a jersey in there or something. They have the XRC. So if you're not familiar with the XRC, it's redeemable for a card of said draft pick, so draft pick number one up to pick 30. So you could get whoever, if Embiid gets drafted first, that's who you got. That's the guy you got. But they're not even auto. They're number to 35. They're redemption. So some of those may sell for a little bit, but I'd rather them not do that, maybe do it in another product where there's more hits and it's kind of added value. I think they look at their bottom line and they figure they have to send all these cards out, so they build that into the product. But I don't know. I mean, you can't really get excited for a draft pick that hasn't been drafted yet, in my opinion.
But last year it was four autos per, right?
It was three. It was three and then a couple
three.
More base cards. Yeah.
Okay, so they pulled away one auto, but it's the same price point.
Right, and they added the XRC.
Which they've done in other products, again, that had more hits. I think
right.
They did the XRC stuff in Gold Standard a couple years ago. And Gold Standard had far more hits than two autos.
Yeah.
So, I can't get behind that one. I'm gonna say go pass on it. Even though we have a case left, I'm going to have to say pass.
It's going to be a mixer material from now on, for the most part. It's just, if it goes down to $50, $60 a box, I'd say it's a decent buy, but not at $120.
I think at $60 or $70, it's doable, but at $120, at $90, at anything over $70, it's a bad deal.
Well, because they Court Kings is, what, $65, $70 retail, and you're talking about at least two hits, plus usually most of them have three to four hits, and you're talking about sick jerseys on average and stuff too. So you're getting, like, way more value out of a box that's half the cost. So I just don't see where it equates. Same thing with Titanium. Same thing with Crusade. These boxes are all half the cost of what Signatures was, and they had so much more value. So I don't know what the concept was with Signatures. I don't think Panini wanted to do a cash grab on it, but that's what it seems like to me. It was just a straight up, you know, we didn't make as much margin on some of these other products. You know, let's do it on this one. Let's make a little bit more money. I mean, I like money too, I guess, you know. So it could have been maybe more well thought out, I think. So that's our take.
It wasn't even a fun product to really break. Like, I mean, I honestly know we're bashing it right now. We probably should just let it go. But the design didn't do anything for me either. And it was tough. And the way they do the parallels, where they have like different photo variations, and that's how they get away with numbering them to like 15, but there's like four different versions of 15. It's insane.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, there's one more, and I'm not going to touch on Crusade too much. I think Crusade was a great – I mean, it was a good product. I don't want to say – it's borderline good, great. I think it's a lot of value for the price point, and I think that's the problem why Signature suffered even more, was because it came out a week after Crusade. So I think we should, you know, maybe let it breathe, Crusade breathe a little bit more. I think maybe it would have been maybe a little bit better. I don't know.
Yeah, Crusade was solid. Just the right amount of base cards, right amount of parallels, right amount of hits. They did great with that. And, yeah, you're right on with what's the point of releasing those two products back-to-back weeks? I don't see how it can benefit anybody besides, I mean, maybe Panini, because they got to get out, you know, they got to get out their products. Crusade would have done a lot better on the secondary market if it would have had about 3 weeks to, like you said, breathe.
Yeah.
But overall, great value. I'm not sure what the Crusade parallels are selling for on the secondary market, but it's similar to last year. It's a good looking design.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good looking design. I think it's a good value in the product. I don't see anything wrong with Crusade. I think it's a fun rip. It's the right amount of packs. You get one auto, one jersey, but you get a good amount of Crusades. So I think it's a fun product.
Yep. Two out of three ain't bad.
Exactly. And Trevor said they need more box toppers that makes people feel better. That's a good point. The box topper feels like something. You think you're getting something good, you know. Plus, there's an autograph chance in the Crusade or Court Kings, for that matter.
Yeah. The box toppers are a good idea.
Before we end the show, I wanted to give it maybe a little bit of national talk. Ryan, have you made your plans for the national already?
Well, I bought my plane tickets, and that's about it. Other than that, just been looking forward to it for sure. It should be a good time out there in Cleveland with Manziel getting picked and all that good stuff. So, and they have now the number one pick in the NBA draft. So, should be a good time. Cleveland maybe a little. It was cheaper to fly to Cleveland. The hotels are cheaper. Everything's cheaper in Cleveland. So. Compared to Chicago last year, and even Baltimore was kind of pricey too. So it should be. Everything looks pretty much same as it always is, and I'm sure it kind of will be. It's the same dealer, you know, same 1956 Mickey Mantle cards everywhere and stuff. So should be a good lots of vintage, I'm sure. So, but then you have, you know, some of the high-end tables and obviously the autograph. I don't go for the autographs, so that doesn't really ever concern me at all. But, you know, people, there's a lot of people who go just for the autograph and, you know, getting those people. So should be a fun time. I really, that's like one of the things I look forward to, that and the Arizona Fall League. So I'm really excited that it's like 2 months away here, or less than that, actually.
Is there anything, your expectations or things that you're looking to do? Are you looking to do anything different from prior years of being at the National? Or
Check out my cards. Always runs a little promo where you can fill up a whole box of cards. 1 year it was five, and I only even got to three boxes, like a 550-count box. So usually they do a little promotion where you get some good money off. You fill up a box, you go give it to them, and they put it on the site. So I'm trying to buy some cards, you know, cheaper cards. And then there's a bunch of players I'm on kind of the lookout for. Eric Bledsoe of the Phoenix Suns. Tony Roten of the Sixers I'm looking for cards for. Dennis Schroeder of the Atlanta Hawks I'm looking for cards for. And then just the normal West Coast guys, Montana, Barry Bonds, current San Francisco Giants players and stuff. So that's about it, you know, just looking for maybe some basketball and some West Coast. You get, like, I got a Montana autograph in Baltimore for $40, TSA DNA,
wow.
on card, everything legit and stuff, $40.
Wow.
So people don't value Montana. You know, they don't think Montana Bonds, you know, Buster Posey. That's just, you know, Manziel's going to be everywhere. Manziel's going to be top price, you know what I mean? But, and Cubs players and kind of that Midwest people. But, you know, once you get past the Mississippi River, they don't care about Buster Posey and the Giants players. So it should be interesting.
Yeah, it's, I mean, is there any ideas you think that the manufacturers could do better for collectors at the National that you've been thinking about?
You know what? I think they do a pretty decent job. Topps always has a real long line for their kind of promotion. They'll probably do some kind of Bowman Platinum. They always do a Bowman Platinum baseball releases right around that time, so they'll do some kind of set with that. I always think Panini does a really good job. They have a huge space that they're working with. They give away the little silver wrapper redemption packs that can be a very good deal, especially with some products where you're buying at a good cost and you're getting 5 to 10 of those silver packs. And they tend to load those up pretty well. So, you know, no, I think they do the best job that they can. It's expensive to get out there. It requires – Panini's probably got, you know, 10, 12 people there. Topps has probably got a half a dozen people. And for Topps to send a half a dozen people somewhere, I mean, that's a miracle in and of itself. So the fact that they're even there, there was a time there during the National where they didn't even have a corporate pavilion. It was just the vintage cards and the dealers. The corporate pavilion has kind of been revived in the last several years, and so I think that's good. And I think they do as good a job as they can. And, you know, definitely Leaf does a lot of exciting things there. It's not even just Panini and Topps. Leaf does a lot of stuff. Blowout Cards does some deals, and D.A. Carwell has a huge table with cheap boxes and stuff. So it's a number of different people. Benchwarmers always has like three or four girls. I mean, that's always kind of exciting to go by the Benchwarmer booth and just see these girls in person, you know, because you're walking around, there's all these old men and kind of, you know, it's like the,
yeah,
you feel like you're stepping, you know, into the senior citizen show, but then you can go over to the Benchwarmers booth, and sometimes they have a little girl passing out cards, so a little distraction, because starting there Wednesday, and I always go for the whole time, starting there Wednesday through Sunday, and you're there the whole time, I mean, you start to lose it a little bit in the little senior citizen show that they got there. So,
absolutely.
I make fun of it, but at the end of the day, it's fun. Like, I don't care where it is. I'm going to go every year, or try to go every year if I can, because it's a lot of fun. And, you know, you see stuff, and you're able to buy stuff that you don't normally see. And a lot of times you can get a really good price. You know, really good. If you know what you're doing, you can get a really good price on some of that stuff. So it's fun.
Yeah, I want to go not related to business one year and just actually be able to spend time going through some of the bins the guys have and, you know, looking through all the booths. I would love to have a lot more time than I had last year to go through everybody's booth and look at the – more so focused on singles, I should say. I would love to have some time to be focused on getting singles and maybe certain hits and building collections that way. But it always – you know, last time I was there, it's, you know, focused on break-in and stuff like that. What are your thoughts, and we'll kind of give our thoughts on it after yours. What are your thoughts about the 12,000 square foot Breakers Pavilion that they're going to have, being the first time they've ever had it?
I heard them talking about it last year, and there was a couple of the national people, and there were a couple of people for it, and there were a couple of people that were rolling their eyes at it. So they have been kind of talking about this actually for a little while, and I don't know. I know there were some guys doing breaks last year and stuff, like full time, kind of the whole thing. It's really loud in there. It's a huge kind of warehouse, you know, it's a huge area. Biggest card show I've ever been to, times like 5 or 10. So it's a huge area. It's loud. I don't know. Like why couldn't you just do the break? I don't know why you would have to break constantly. I could see maybe breaking for an hour or two. I don't know if the area and the space is like conducive to breaking. I don't know if I was buying into a break, and I might be interested in what's going on at the National, but if I'm buying into a break, I just kind of want it to be the normal thing, either at the office or the house or whatever it is, whatever, to kind of enjoy myself. I don't have to worry about all this background, like noise going on in the background at this big show. So I don't know. My brother said that they were having trouble selling spots for that, and he told me that, and usually he doesn't like get inside information. So I should have asked him like how he heard about that. But he said that he heard from somebody that they were having trouble selling spots, and I guess they are because they've been. I've seen 3 or 4 people write articles about, you know, oh, such and such group breaker area or something. So they haven't even sold out all the spots, and it's more expensive just get a table. I think the tables are like $1,500. Why wouldn't you just get a table for less and, you know, I guess bring your own Wi-Fi or whatever and do your breaks at a table? I don't know. It seems expensive, and I don't know how many spots he's trying to fill. I mean, are 20 guys going to fly to Cleveland or get to Cleveland and do this and pay $2,000? That seems like a stretch. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, I have, you know, I think if it's done right, and this is going to be a wait and see. I mean, obviously this shows you that this segment of the industry has gotten to the point where something like this is a possibility. So I'll say that first, and I got to tread lightly here because I'm obviously a little biased on the subject, but I mean, I guess I don't have to tread lightly, but I'm trying to think of from both sides is actually what I'm trying to say here. I'm trying to think from the collector side, and then I'm also trying to think from the breaker side. So I'm using my two brains kind of here as I'm kind of thinking this out. But, I mean, from a collector standpoint, think of it, and we've taken the break on the road, and maybe from our experiences, you know, from where we've had to deal with setting up and Wi-Fi issues and stuff like that, it's kind of been of a nightmare. I don't know what setup they have there. So, you know, if it's top-notch, easy to plug in and stuff like that, maybe it's going to run great for those guys. But they all are going to stream on different platforms. So I don't know, you know, what's going to take more Wi-Fi and how that's going to work. So that's first off. But for me as a collector, like you said, I'd rather be sitting in my PJs and watching breaks from home. And I do that. I buy another guy's breaks like Leighton and stuff like that. If I'm at the National, the first thing I'm going to do, and this is me as a collector, I'm going to stand in the Panini or the Topps lines, and I'm going to get their promo pack. That's going to be the first thing I'm going to do. The second thing I'm going to do is I'm going to probably try to get, like, an autograph from one of the guys I want to get. Like, maybe Jose Canseco's there. I want to get a Jose Canseco. I want to meet this guy. Just for an example, there's probably a guy, not Jose Canseco there, but, you know, there's some guys that I want an autograph for. Thirdly, I'm going to go buy a box from, you know, Blowout or whatnot. I'm going to try to find a good deal on a Blowout box. Fourthly, I'm going to, I don't think fourthly is even a word, but I'm using it here. I'm going to look for singles. You got to make some kind of big draw to get people to that booth to take them away from all those other fun events that are going down at the National as a collector. That's what I think. And he very well may pull it off there. I don't know. They may have some kind of crazy fireworks going off. They hit a big hit and there's fireworks and people start running to the booth. So who knows? They may do it, make it big. And I hope so, because for this industry, I think it would be good for these guys to get seen. What do you think, Dan?
Well, I mean, you kind of covered everything. Coming from a breaker standpoint, taking the breaker show on the road is no picnic. And there's a lot of different variables that go into it that are really out of your control. And, to be honest, we've done it a handful of times, and we've done it with our own Wi-Fi. And sometimes the Wi-Fi has worked. Sometimes it hasn't. There's no rhyme or reason of why it doesn't work. And when you're sitting there scrambling and you have, 40 people, 50 people in your room waiting for your break, you're just doing a disservice to them, your customers, because they just want to get into the break like they usually do. But because you have so many different issues that you're trying to run through and fix, it's just not happening. And I think if everybody's trying to run on Wi-Fi in a small area and everybody's trying to do it at the same time, you're going to have interference. And there's no way they're going to run each individual hardwires to all these guys' booths. That's just not going to happen.
It could be.
Okay. We don't know that, but I've heard I've heard that it's going to be Wi-Fi based.
Yeah.
So I'm not 100% sure that if it's not going to be Wi-Fi based, but I have heard from people who are planning on being a part of it that it's going to be Wi-Fi.
Right.
So maybe they can wire everybody in, but I mean, we know we did a convention at Vegas, how expensive it is to get your Wi-Fi or to get your internet wired into their system. It's not cheap.
Right.
Frankly, we
pissed off people. People bought into these breaks and they couldn't watch us and the video wasn't there and we had to upload the videos manually. And, people are so used to us being back at our normal break station, which is hardwired in. It's the highest speed internet you could buy from Comcast. So we usually don't have too many problems. I mean, every once in a while we have a few hiccups with the internet connection. But, people are used to that, 365 days a year, and then the 10 days you take out of those 365 to take breaks on the road, it's out of the normal, and people, they get upset. I mean, and I don't blame them. I mean, they spend their good money to get in these breaks, and it's a disservice. Like you said, it's an absolute disservice. That's from our traveling day, our taking it on the road.
Like you said, it's the one thing for the internet, and that's completely out of your hands. But it's another thing to break all these products, and you're like, okay, cool, now I need to ship them back.
Right.
So that's a whole other step and could be a disaster. I mean, what if these cards don't get back to you? Or what if they get damaged in shipping? It's just one extra huge step that you're taking, and basically your customers are taking the biggest risk.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We've had this talk, taking the group break show on the road, and plus, it's not a real interactive situation going on when you're breaking. There's not a lot of people who are going to hover around you and like want to see where you're opening, because there's so many other things going on. And
unless you're opening a product that's not out yet. That would be
okay,
the case.
Yeah, I get that, but there's also the way you're showing the cards, you're not opening it up for people to view on the outside. You're opening up cards for people to view through a webcam.
Right.
So it's not like you're opening it up and you're showing everybody who's watching the card. That's not the way it works, because the people who are paying for it are watching on the webcam. So
right.
They need to be shown the card. it's not like we're doing, I mean, I could see like an unboxing where you're opening up cards and you're basically showing it to the people who are watching. That's completely different. But when you're selling a break through your website and then breaking it there at the National, as a patron watching a break, it doesn't really do much for you because the breaker is usually, like I said, not showing the card to the people who are watching the break. So I don't know. I kind of feel like I'm being a Debbie Downer, but that's just what I see. I mean,
I have no problem
like going to a certain manufacturer's booth and doing a break for them, just, you know, showing that you, you know, back their product, back their brand, building that relationship with them. No issue with that. But having a full pavilion full of breakers going on at the same time, they're all screaming over each other, probably all going to be fighting over Wi-Fi bandwidth is probably what's going to happen. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, and I see all the challenges, and maybe these are already all worked out. I don't know. And I really do hope that this does take off. I hope that this does, bring breakers to the National and stamp our footprint out there, I guess, for lack of a better idea there. I really hope it does take off. Just the challenges that I would see right away and what you just said make it kind of tough, I guess. But we'll see.
I mean, now we're on the topic. What do you think the objective, what do you think the goal is of having a breaker pavilion? Is it is it to show the masses of the card collecting community that breaks exist and this is what they're about?
It is. No, it's probably to pull in those people that don't know what it is yet.
I think it's a small niche hobby. I think everybody who's involved in it now familiar with group breaks, like them or don't like them. I think you're familiar with the group break. I think you're familiar with the way it's done, the different styles that it's done. I don't think that's the motive. I don't think the motive is to expand the category of group breaks. Because I really think that everybody
I think you're wrong there. I think somebody took a survey last year, and I think only 10% of the people that were at the National that they surveyed knew what group breaks were.
Oof. I disagree with the survey. I think more people do understand, especially in the last year. I could just look how many group breakers are at the summit now compared to how many were there like 2 years ago, a year ago.
Yeah.
If they're going to these events, then somebody must know about them enough for them to be at the event.
Yes.
So,
but, for somebody just, you know, a lot of the, like $2,900 or whatever the price is, or it's in the 2000s, let's just say, that's a lot of money for somebody. That's a lot of money for anybody that's, like, within a first year of their business to take a chance on. That's a lot of money. So that the exposure really needs to be there. The exposure, the what you're going to get out of it, you know, and I hope that these guys that are doing it are setting up email like lists, giving out free promos spots or whatever, and just basically making the most out of it. Because if you're sitting there breaking and you're just selling to your online customers anyway, then you're just basically wasting your money for the booth. You have to be able to spend that. If you're going there and you're trying to get exposure for your business, the best way to do it would be to sit there. I mean, even if you're walking around getting emails, telling them what you do, selling yourself. Maybe if you're in the booth, you're limiting yourself. I don't know. I mean, it depends on how much traffic's going to go to that booth. How much, and I know that's also $300 an hour to get on the main stage. So if you wanted to do one big break on the main stage, maybe that would be worth it to pay that, do one 45-minute break or something, a free break on the main stage.
Yeah. I just think I think there ha I mean there has to be some motive, and I don't if the motive is expanding group breaks so everybody in the hobby understands what they are, that would mean that you would have to have somebody up there explaining how to conduct group breaks, explaining different types of group breaks, like basically doing clinics and tutorials on how to manage or participate in a group break. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think it's just going to be people just
I think it's a national – well, see, and that's tough too. Yeah, I agree with you. I would think that how to participate – I mean, because – I mean, I don't think it's a place where a lot of people – well, a lot of people do want to get in a group and start group breaks. But, I mean, telling people how to participate would be great. But when you have 30 different breakers and their rules are all different, what do you do?
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, that would be where I can see, oh, well, actively trying to bring the group breaking to the masses and explaining to the customers how to go about getting into group breaks and different types of group breaks and stuff like that. I can see that. But I don't know. I that to me is trying to get the word out.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen. And again, getting back to, do people actually know about group breaks and people getting into the hobby and stuff like that? If you were to count how many group breakers are based out of California and how many hobby shops there are in California, I bet there's more group breakers based out of California now than there are hobby shops.
Yeah. I know Ryan's wheel's turning right now. He's thinking $2,200 on Google AdWords would probably be more money well spent.
Oh, my God. I mean, I don't want to get into it too much, but if I spent $2,200 on Google AdWords, that's a minimum a double, minimum. I'm getting $4,400 from Google the next month, guaranteed, and not have to do anything, and not have to fly to Cleveland, not have to do anything. I have to set up a web page for 5 minutes and, you know, get $2,200. I mean, good Lord, that's yeah, that's easy money. That's easy money. Those the breaker pavilion. Here's the thing: there were three breakers there last year that were it felt like they were kind of doing it the whole time, the whole day.
Yeah,
two of them aren't even doing breaks anymore. So you know, how much pop did they get off the? I think it's great if breakers go and do the breaks at the hotel room or do the breaks at, you know, Panini's booth or Lee's booth or whatever. I just don't know, like you guys said, how much value is there that you're really going to get. There's going to be a bunch of old men walking around that even if they understand the concept of a group break, they're looking for their vintage Ted Williams card. They're not. They don't care about Bowman Platinum. There's a large percentage of people there that literally have no clue what set just came out or what set's coming out, or, you know, they're literally there for the vintage.
Right.
They're there for other stuff, for the collectible factor of it. I mean, some guy, literally last year, I know we were running out of time, some guy literally, I was sitting there talking to him, he had this big, like, 1970 space age kind of roller thing, puts it up on the table, and I don't know this guy from nothing. Pulls out, he has like three things inside of it. Pulls out a full wetsuit. Okay? Why he had a wetsuit, apparently it was tied to him getting kicked off some kind of forum. Then he pulls out something that was worth $18,000. And I even went later and looked it up, and yes, it was worth $18,000, and it was some 1908 something, 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 graded by SCG. And it was literally worth $18,000. And then he pulled out another one that was worth about $6,000. So he had like three things in his case. This guy was bizarre. But this guy had no clue that Bowman Platinum just came out. You know what I mean? Or Alan Ginther was coming out next week. And there's a bunch of guys just like that, but a lot of times they're older guys that are there for something else. So, Google. You know, what you say about Google AdWords, that's a good thing. I mean, I've tried to even test that for if you could do that for breakers. Like, could you advertise your business through Google AdWords? It's a much, you know, it'd be a little more complicated to do it that way, where you're trying to get orders for stuff instead of just sending them to some website and getting them to click on something or get them to put in their email address or whatever it is. So, you know, but $2,000 seems like a lot of money when you could just go and do the break at the hotel or take an hour from the show and go back to the hotel, do a break, come back, buy some singles or whatever, talk to some people, go back, do a break. So I don't know. That's the way I would do it. I don't know. It's going to be too loud. It's just going to be too – you guys know. Your customers want to – you know, it's entertainment for them a lot of times if they're watching. So it's entertainment for them, and they want it to be like a television show, and they don't want it to be a like some kind of crazy thing with all this background noise and things going on and does the Wi-Fi work and all that stuff. So it's just a tough situation.
Yeah. Well, it's okay. And I'm taking this out of Donovan's, what he just said. Sanjeev's just going to – he's going to buy the National next year anyway, so it's going to be completely different. But, I really hope it does turn out, and I think anybody that's starting out that they decided to get a booth there, I think you will learn some invaluable lessons, so maybe, you know, the money is going to be well spent. And – you know, they're bringing in Carlos Baerga to sign at the pavilion, so they may get, you know, some traffic, and it's going to be – I think it's going to be a free signer. So they're going to probably, if it's done right, they may have him walk right through everybody, so you may get some great visibility there. So it's all going to be on how you market yourself at that booth and how you capture people's information, and I think it's going to be the most valuable thing that you can take out of it if you're there with the booth. So that's my two cents, I think. I mean, you know, there's always – ways to capitalize on every situation, but I think you got to be a go-getter, and you got to be friendly, and you got to be personable, and just talk to people. That's it, basically.
Word. Wow.
But I think that's pretty much it. With 2 minutes left for the show, I think that's we touched on I think almost everything I had written down, and then some. We went on some tangents today. So anything else you guys like to add in or anything like that?
No, just going to go check out what the Loot Crate's all about. And, yep.
I think that's what I'm going to do, too, man. I like that. Might have to get me a Loot.
Loot Crate?
Like the Biggie song, give me the Loot, give me the Loot. So, Yeah, something like that. Well, we'll be back, if not next week. You know we're always good for a bi-weekly show. So if we're not back next week, we'll see you the following week. And other than that, check out mojobreak.com, sportscardradio.com, and we'll be talking to you guys. Thank you again for listening. For those that download on iTunes, we appreciate it. I get a few tweets from you guys asking, you know, when's the next show, blah, 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 and that, you know, that means a lot for you guys to that I know people are out there listening. So we appreciate it more than you know. So thanks again, and we'll catch you guys again soon. See you later.
Later.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Sports Card Live, sponsored by SportsCardRadio.com, MojoBreak.com. Check us out every Tuesday live at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 Eastern, or download us on iTunes.